Now it's my turn. It's 10:09. This is WGN. It's the John Williams Saturday Show. Good morning. We haven't done this in a while, have we? Either it's been a holiday break for Thanksgiving, or it's been a football game or something like that. But it's good to be back in the saddle with James Sears, right, in the WGN Radio Newsroom?
That's right.
Do you go by Jim or James?
James. My father is Jim.
Ah, nice to see you, James. So welcome to the show. People know you from the Quad Cities where you anchored TV news for a while. Is that right?
That's right. I was out there for 3 years. Anchored the morning show, anchored weekends, evening news. So I was all over out there.
So shout out to the folks in the Quad Cities probably driving around listening to us. They're going, wait a minute, Sears is on WGN Radio now. Holy smokes.
That's right, from Local 4 News to WGN Radio.
Yeah, well, I don't know if that's a step up or step down, but we're sure glad to have you in the mix.
Thank you.
Joe Brands over at WGN Radio Sports. Producer Griffin is sitting on the other side of the big glass today, and I've got a new shift now, weekdays from 9 a.m. to noon, but I'm still doing the Saturday show at least through December, and then after the first of the year, we move to 1 o'clock in the afternoons here on weekends on WGN. That is on Saturdays. Joe, you're looking good. You're well, I trust.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying I'm looking good. I'm doing all right. Yeah. It's a good time right now.
One quick thing, and I don't want to dwell on this because I don't want to get into the arcana of it all. But for Bears fans, if you want to, by the way, the news click at WGNradio.com, our daily web poll question is, do you think we got it now? The Bears are going to be in the playoffs. We might actually, after all of the gnashing of teeth and screaming and hollering that we've been doing, we might actually be in the playoffs. So we asked you, are you feeling it? We've won 4 of our last 5. And finally, Trubisky had a good game. In the postgame show, they called him Mitchell, affectionately, the way you do a favorite son. So it was really swell. And so we said, do you think that they're going to make the playoffs? And about 74% of you are saying, nah, it's too late. But if you do want to see the Bears in the playoffs, basically 3 things have to happen. Number 1, Bears have to win the remaining 3 games. Number 2, the Rams. Is that the other team I'm watching here, Joe Brand?
Yes, the Rams and the Vikings.
So those are the only 3 teams that are in your world right now if you want the Bears in the playoffs. Bears win, Rams lose twice, and Vikings lose at least once.
Correct. So, yeah, I did some more diving into it during the break. And the best chance, yes, is for the Bears to win out. Technically, they can lose one game, but then they need a whole bunch more to work out.
I don't want to know about that.
Yeah, because even if the Bears have 9 wins, then they still need to beat the Vikings, and they need the Rams to have less wins because right now, the Rams own the tiebreaker over the Bears because they beat them head-to-head. The Bears have the advantage with the head-to-head matchup against the Vikings if they wind up with the same record. But, of course, it comes down to the very last game of the regular season. It's all going to come down to next week, pretty much. I mean, it's Bears, Packers looking for redemption from last week, or I'm sorry, from the very first week of the year. And more importantly, just if Mitch Trubisky can continue what offensive rhythm he had in Thursday night's win against Dallas, or if that was just kind of a spur-of-the-moment thing.
Yeah. So when the Vikings play the Packers, we're rooting for Green Bay.
Correct.
We want the Vikings to lose. We want the Rams to lose twice. And they play Seattle. They play Dallas. They play Kansas City, I think. So they've got a not an easy path. So Rams lose, Vikings lose, Bears win. That's all you need to know, Griff, if you want to like be in the conversation about the Bears in the playoffs. You got that?
Got it.
All right, let's quiz Griffin and see if he's got it now. Griff, what are the 3 things that even a casual Bears fan needs to know this year?
They need to know to just let it go. Yeah. Those are the 3 words, let it go.
Okay, that's fine.
Boy, that's like an Aaron Rodgers approach right there. Just
hey, don't worry about it. I got it under control. But Aaron Rodgers does. That's the thing.
They need to win.
Yeah. Thank you for that analysis. I'll just say this for the record. James is doing the story about the woman that former police superintendent Eddie Johnson was drinking with. And that story has kind of taken a turn that none of us anticipated when it first came out. And he's no longer the police superintendent. If they don't spend a lot of time and money figuring out these details, I'm okay with it. They are. It's in the news. We'll continue to report it because it's news. But if I were king, I would just, like the Jussie Smollett story, say, yeah, there's still something there, but I'm not going to waste any time or money on it. I would let that story go, but I don't think that's going to happen. And speaking of frivolous uses of our time, energy, and money, I don't know what's more elitist, but this Peloton ad controversy, hokey smokes. The Peloton ad, or the people with the time to sit around and judge it for being elitist. I don't know what's worse. But no holiday shopping season passes without some controversy. And right now, the controversy for 2019 is this expensive exercise stationary bicycle that you have at your home. On the heels of this one commercial, Peloton does well. That's a going concern. That's an amazing product. People love it. And here comes Christmas, time to really juice the sales. And because of this one commercial, the company lost $1 billion in valuation. The stock went from $36.84 a share to a low of $30.51 a share.
It does seem like it's the commercial's fault. I would say maybe that's part of a larger trend of people looking at these. Peloton's not exactly a tech company, but these new prestige-y kind of companies and taking a look at them and like, are they really worth what we think they're worth? And then as soon as they have a reason to get out,
they jump off to
make that stock plummet, it's like, no.
But that would be the investor's standpoint. I mean, the people that have... My sister has one of these things, and she swears by it. It's sweat-stained. She loves it. She gets on that thing, and she pedals like mad. And I suppose the people that have them, I don't know, maybe some of you are using it to dry your clothes the way we used to a lot of the exercise equipment we've bought over the years. But it seems to me like the people that have invested in this thing have invested in this thing. So what's all the controversy about then? I'll play for you a couple of clips from the commercial that has caused $1 billion evaluation to fly from this company. I don't know. Is it wrong or is it creepy or sexist? I mean, they're using the word sexist and elitist. I'm not sure what elitist means, but I think I know what sexist means. To give a $2,000 stationary cycle to someone for Christmas. I don't think it is, right? Like if you want to get your husband or wife a Mercedes, they always do that commercial campaign at Christmas where they wrap the Mercedes. You and I aren't going to go out and get a Mercedes for Christmas, but some people are, or it's commercial. There's nothing wrong with wanting or giving or getting a Mercedes or a nice watch or an expensive sweater or this expensive stationary cycle for Christmas. There's nothing wrong with that. It's a product that people can want for Christmas. No problems. The first 20 seconds of this 30-second ad show this lovely young mother getting the Peloton for Christmas, and she's thrilled. And we see her starting her everyday journey of riding her bike.
Okay, you ready?
Yes.
Now.
A Peloton? Give it up for our first time riding.
All right, first ride. I'm a little nervous, but excited. Let's do this. 5 days in a row. You surprised?
I am.
6 a.m. Yay.
Rising with the sun.
That was totally worth it.
Let's go, Grace in Boston. 50 rides.
She just said my name.
Okay, so that's the first part of the ad, right? She gets it on Christmas morning, and now we're seeing her riding away. And you hear that voice in the background. That's the screen where the leader is leading people like her on their rides that morning. Where it takes a weird turn in this 30-second commercial is at the 22-second mark when the woman says this.
A year ago, I didn't realize how much this would change me.
A year ago, I didn't realize how. So now it's a year later, and she's been riding this thing. Being wealthy and thin and model good looking doesn't mean that you're happy or fulfilled. But the woman in the ad, even before she got the Peloton, had a wealthy lifestyle, is a model. She's gorgeous. She has lovely clothes. She has a delightful little daughter. She's got a handsome husband. I mean, I don't know how much her life needed changing, but by God, now that she's got the Peloton, her life has really changed. And where the ad gets creepy, this will be bite number three, Griff, where the ad gets creepy is at the very end of the commercial. Play the very end of the commercial, Griff.
Thank you.
This holiday, give the gift of Peloton.
Because at the very end of the commercial, she and her husband are watching the video log that she's made. She's been riding the bicycle for a year, and she's been recording videos of her doing it on her phone. And now on their big, beautiful TV in their big, beautiful living room, they're watching sort of the video of her journey over the past year. And she's still thin and beautiful, but somehow she's changed. She's a better person. But the weird thing is, and she's like, thank you to her husband. And he's sitting there looking at the TV, ramrod straight at the edge of the sofa. He is so super proud of this Stepford wife that he's created here, this perfect female machine that rides the cycle. I mean, I did not get that the first time I saw the ad. I just thought, oh, it's a really pretty lady who's riding a bicycle and she's happy about it. But then when you watch the ad, you go, well, somebody actually blocked this commercial out and this is what's happened. This is the message.
I'm not here to defend the Peloton ad, but
yes,
I don't.
You are.
I think when you talk, it is weird. You watch it and it.
The last 5 seconds, I get off the bus. Go ahead, Griff.
It rings a little wrong somehow, but who knows how. And then.
Go ahead. Yeah. I know you guys have got two people in there. Go ahead, Griff. It's okay.
It just looks weird, but I think when you try to articulate what is weird about it, you get sidetracked. I think it has a lot to do with her performance. It's something about her face when you see it is like pained and strained. And like when she's, I think it's all about when she says that she's nervous before she starts her Peloton journey.
Oh yeah, right.
And that's all it takes on the internet is just like 2 seconds of something that is strange and people find it and seize and like, and take that opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, I do agree with a lot of the larger points that like, but I don't know. I don't know about this one.
I agree with Griffin in the aspect of I don't see anybody doing a video vlog of their goal or, you know, their whole training on using something like that. But the other thing is, aren't all these companies that are either, you know, a workout facility or workout equipment, they're not just selling fitness, they're selling confidence. And this is going to change your life because you'll be a more confident person. And this is internally going to help you along with externally.
I guess so. Would it have helped the ad if she was a little overweight and a year later we saw
this
her
is
looking
exactly
more
what you
fit?
Don't want. I think
that would have been a mistake.
I think, yeah, you get a lot more backlash that way then.
But what you're saying is like, it doesn't make sense. She looks fine. So why would she want to be even more healthy? And I think the point of the ad is supposed to be it contributes to a healthy lifestyle. It's not all about how you look.
That's the point of the ad. But the criticism seems to be tapping into what I was suggesting, right, Griffin? It's like, hey, dude, this is kind of sexist that your wife isn't good enough for you. You're getting her an exercise cycle.
I think that is where some of the criticism comes from. But the truth is probably, I think a lot of people are like, I want a Peloton. Like, not just women, but all kinds of people are like, those are expensive and really nice, and I would kind of like one.
Yeah.
So to be like, I'm so mad that he got me. It does send a message. But I think if you're in a somewhat decent marriage, you're communicating. She's probably mentioned that she wants one. That's where my mind goes.
Oh, anyway. Yeah. No, really. The first 20 seconds of the commercial, I'm okay with it. I mean, it's obviously a couple of means. These things are expensive. It's not something that people who don't have $2,000 to throw away on a stationary cycle are going to get. So the first part of the commercial plays out kind of realistically to me, right? She wanted it. She got it. I have no problem with that.
Yeah, it's the watching of the videos at the end. That's weird.
Right.
It comes together strange, and it's hard to put your finger on it. And I think when people decide that they know exactly why it's weird, they start saying things that are just a little wrong.
Like I just did, you mean?
Well, who's to say? But other people, too.
How many canceled orders do you think have happened last week?
Well, okay, so did you see what the Ryan Reynolds did? We'll pause here. I got to play a commercial, not for Peloton, probably ever now. But we'll play a commercial and then come back. But Ryan Reynolds has a gin, aviation gin. I didn't know he was the guy behind that. That's his marquee brand, right? He's taken that same actress and put her in his new commercial. For News at 10, watch WGN. That's Micah Mateer, Joe Donlin, Dan Rohn, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For TV News at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN 1026. This is John Williams. Thanks for tuning in. You can hear me weekdays from 9 to noon on WGN. And on all social media, I'm WGN King John. Our news click, the daily web poll question on my Facebook page, is asking you, what do you think of the Bears' chances? Griffin, quick review of the quiz now. 3 things Bears fans need to know in order to root the team on and be tapped into us being in the playoffs are?
You get a Peloton.
You get a Peloton if you get this right, Griff. What are the 3 things you need
to know?
The Bears,
they need Pelotons for the whole team.
The correct answer is Bears win all of their remaining games, more or less, Rams lose twice. Joe Brand's keeping score over there. And Vikings lose once.
Correct.
All right. Okay.
Yes, and preferably, yes, but preferably the Bears beat the Vikings for their lone loss.
Because, you know, to me, as a like the Bears aren't playing this weekend. They already played Thursday. But now, at least with the NFL games on this weekend, I've got something, I've got a little more vested interest now. I'll check on the Rams' score. We need the Rams to lose two of their remaining games.
The Vikings are playing the Lions, so we'll be rooting for the Lions today, or tomorrow.
Yeah, right, right, right. By the way, in a few minutes, we'll visit with Brian Tellerico from RogerEbert.com. The folks at RogerEbert.com, that's a terrific website if you like movies and TV. They have their list of the best movies and TV shows of the decade. Among the best movies of the decade, number 8, Roma. Number 7, Under the Skin. Number 5, Phantom Thread. We'll pick it up there in just a couple of minutes. Let's finish this conversation, though, about the Peloton ad. So we've been talking a little bit about this year's holiday controversy. The Peloton stationary cycle has an ad, and it shows this lovely woman riding on the cycle. Her husband got it for her for Christmas. No harm in that, although some people get off the bus there. At the very end of the ad, though, they're watching the video that she's made of the past year where she's riding it, and she's such a happier, better person now, and he's super-duper proud, and the whole thing comes across to me as kind of Stepfordian, but whatever. So then Ryan Reynolds has a gin called Aviation Gin, and he's hired that very same actress to do a commercial for his gin, as if her friends have rescued her from the Life in the Peloton commercial. We see the Peloton actress at a bar with two of her friends, and they've all got martinis in front of them.
This gin is really smooth.
Yeah.
We can get you another one if you'd like.
You're safe here.
To new beginnings.
To new beginnings.
Wow, you're safe here. I mean, that's a shot across the bow, right? You have been held captive by this bizarre husband of yours. I mean, it almost makes the thing sound abusive. You're safe here. And then to new beginnings, they do cheers.
I think the fact that it's Ryan Reynolds' company gives it just a little bit more because he can go the comedic route where, oh, she was not safe, you know, from whatever. You don't want to go to the abusive route, but, you know, maybe this guy was just a complete lunatic or something like that. If it wasn't a Ryan Reynolds, you know, a comedic feel, then, yeah, it's like, oh, my goodness, what are you insinuating from the previous ad?
The ad does have a dark comedic feel. No mention of Peloton. They're not like, hey, you're the girl in the Peloton commercial, or where's your exercise cycle, or, boy, your core looks good now, or whatever. You know, there's no reference to that at all, except in the very end of the commercial. And, again, no mention to Peloton, but at the end of the Aviation Gin ad, we get the Peloton mom, and she's chugging now her second martini.
There you go. It's going to be a fun night. Take this too.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You look great, by the way.
And that's it. And then that's the entirety of the spoken words in the ad. Three ladies at a bar drinking martinis, and that's the Aviation Gin ad. It exists on the internet, and the internet loves the gin ad. They are shredding Peloton. Peloton lost 10% of its value in a half a week because of the, you know, I feel bad for the person who is sitting there going, I've got an idea for a commercial. Let's get a lady and she rides the thing. And then she says thank you to her husband. $1 billion.
What could go wrong?
I know. What could go wrong?
I feel like that ad agency will not be producing things for Peloton in the future.
Or maybe. I know. And somebody, you
they
know.
Say they stand by the ad. It's still up.
Peloton does? Really? No kidding.
Yeah. The comments have been disabled, but the video's still up.
That is a good point. All right, we're done with this. Arlene, you get to chime in, and then we move on. What's up, Arlene?
I so don't get the criticism of Peloton. I'm a runner. I do 1,200 miles a year. And if somebody gives me a pair of running shoes, I don't take that as an insult. And I've seen the martini commercial. I'm thinking, so I guess it's better that we go out and drain our martinis and go out for a run or work out on our Peloton. I don't get it.
That's what the gin guy is saying. I mean, the gin guy isn't trying to sell you a Peloton. He's trying to sell you some gin. So he's like, hey, if you thought that was bizarre, just go out and have a drink. It's funny because
several. I mean, like you said, she's downing two of them. And isn't it more healthy that she goes out and runs, or for me, or that she gets on her Peloton and rides?
I appreciate your call. Thanks, Arlene.
Thanks.
Have a a good day. You know, a lot of the alcohol commercials these days always have a little disclaimer at the end, like, always drink responsibly. Aviation Gin is not saying that. She's chugging her second martini. There's no please drink responsibly. Maybe the friends are going to drive her home, but there's none of that messaging there. It's 10:32 on WGN. So as you said about drinking martinis this holiday season, let's just catch you up on some good shows to watch, some good movies to view. RogerEbert.com has their list of the best of the decade so far. It's a pretty good list. It's a nice reminder after this. The editor over at RogerEbert.com is Brian Tallarico. He joins us again on WGN Radio. He's been a guest of this show many times, and we always appreciate your time. How are you, Brian?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. So it's funny because this time of year, folks like you do end-of-the-year lists, but since I guess technically we're finishing a decade, we're also getting the best of the 2010s, aren't we?
Yes, we are. We published best of film and best of TV stuff. And just so listeners know, we have best of the year stuff coming in the next few weeks, too. It's just so many lists. Too many lists to count.
And I find, though, that, you know, where we say there's like 500 different scripted TV shows a year now, and it's impossible to watch them all. But I find that I probably watch 400 of them myself. That we are, we do find the time to watch some of these.
We do, especially because it's easier to watch than ever. I mean, really, the major technological change, if we want to get into this a little bit, was DVRs and streaming, making it, I mean, you and I are old enough to remember when you had to schedule sitting down to actually watch it. Maybe you could VHS record it if you could figure out how to do so. Otherwise, you weren't going to see it until it was rerun late at night a couple years later.
Absolutely. The ease is making it possible to consume more than ever. And the other thing is, I don't know that I feel guilty about it, but I wonder how, I guess they don't mind, the producers of these people who spend enormous amounts of money and time and energy and creativity, and they make a whole series. And then instead of enjoying it over several weeks, the way television used to be experienced, we just cram it all down our throats in one night. You could plow through an entire years worth of somebody's experience and work and effort and sweat in one night and go, that's pretty good. What else you got?
Yeah, and I'm kind of interested, maybe we'd save this for another segment. I'm interested in what that's doing to the discourse and creativity in general. I think, take for example, something like Stranger Things, which comes out on a weekend and everyone's talking about it for 3 days and then you forget it even aired this year. It goes by so fast. But then take something like Watchmen, which has been on for 2 months now and people are talking about constantly. I think the weekly thing does still help certain shows stay in the public conversation and build audiences. Killing Eve was a show that built audience week by week. If Killing Eve had been released on Hulu on a Friday and gone by Sunday, no one would have paid attention to it.
And that was a
Some
great
shows
series,
need
too.
Buzz, yeah.
And I don't exactly understand the value of that because it keeps you coming back to that channel or to that website or to that service.
Yeah.
So what's the harm in Game of Thrones? We waited years for episodes. It seems to me like that was good for HBO. Why wouldn't it be good for these other, for Netflix to string us on? We would come back, I would think.
Well, Hulu's doing it. Hulu's dropping three on its first week and then one a week. Apple TV's doing it. I think we're going to see more people going back to it because a lot of this Netflix programming does seem disposable. And then the big question is, does Netflix care? As long as they have your subscription money, I mean, the argument then is Netflix really a place for creative television programming, or do they really just want something for you to pay the money to subscribe to binge on a weekend and then move on to the next thing? Are they in the quantity game instead of the quality game?
But that's the funny thing, isn't it? Because I think, Griff, you can chime in on this too, Netflix and the rest of them, I think the quality is still there. I think when I'm looking at your list, for instance, I go, these are damn good shows.
They produce at such a high volume that you don't even hear about. It's so easy for them to bury their losses.
That's true.
When a show is bad, you don't even know it exists. Whereas if it's on NBC and they have a bad show, you're like, oh, another terrible show from NBC.
That you have to see commercials for every single week. That's true. The losses go away quicker. But I will argue this, too. Does Netflix really have an Americans or a Mad Men or a Breaking Bad or a Sopranos? I would argue that they don't. I mean, in the film arena, they're turning a corner, like Irishman and Marriage Story that everyone's talking about. But if you look at our top 25 of the decade, there's one Netflix program, and it's a miniseries. So they aren't quite there on that tier of HBO or AMC or even FX's programming in the last decade. And I think part of that is because things cycle through so quickly and no one really notices. You have to dig so hard to find the good stuff.
Well, and I've and never... They,
and that's,
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, and I've never, that's their model.
Yeah, I've never created a show, but shows change as they air, if they are airing week to week, and they grow and learn from the response to the last week's episode. When they're all creating a whole season all at once, it's just a totally different process. So, right. And the product is different.
Well, and the big question is, I think Netflix arguably wants this. They want something that you can watch while you're playing with your phone and doing something else. In other words, they're making a more disposable form of content than HBO, which is airing one or two new original shows a week, as opposed to 35 in a month, like most of which you've never even heard of. It's a quantity game over quality, like I said.
So I'll plow through some of the movies with you in a minute, but let's just do your TV shows first. You said the best TV show of the 2010s, The Americans, on FX. Yep. At my house, no argument. That was a big hit where we live. Mad Men is your number two on AMC. Number three, Breaking Bad. Everybody's got lists, but I mean, you can't argue with those three. Maybe people would say, wait a minute, The Americans, but that was a really good series. Is that you showing off? Are you one of those guys who puts something out there in a high position just to torque people like me off because that'll get a reaction?
No, of course not. And to be honest, if I did, the list would be different. Because like you said, I think those top three, really our top like five, are common everywhere.
Yeah.
And after that, it gets a little more. In other words, there seems to be consensus. It's not like I put something strange or we. To be fair, this is a list co-authored by myself and our other TV critic, Allison Shoemaker. So we kind of just combined our opinions. It's not like, so I'll use the word we, just so your listeners understand. It's not like we purposefully did anything off the map. To be honest, the top of this list is a little routine, if you know what I mean. Yeah, it's like everyone's put those at the top.
Right. So. Okay, so we go Americans, Mad Men, Breaking Bad. Game of Thrones is not on here, but we'll just keep going. Leftovers. that may be you torquing us off. Number four is The Leftovers on HBO. Fleabag is number five. Hannibal on NBC, hello, is number six. Atlanta is number seven on FX. The Good Place, speaking of the networks, NBC, what an innovative show, is your number eight. You all put Parks and Rec, NBC, at number nine. And Twin Peaks from Showtime are your top 10 shows of the decade. So not a bad list.
No.
What's exceptional to you, conspicuously in there or absent?
Oh, well, do you want to know what we've gotten the most comments and flack over? It's Game of Thrones, of course, and BoJack Horseman, which is a Netflix animated show that everyone loves more than I do.
I'm sorry, I don't want to sound like a flacky or something, but I have tried so hard with BoJack Horseman.
Yeah.
Every time a new season comes out, I'm convinced by the chorus of people who love it so much, and I'm like, okay, this must be the season
it's
where it's going
to happen for me.
I can't do it. I really can't do it.
For you.
There's some. It's fine. Like there's some good stuff in there. It's smart. The voice work is undeniably great. Great voice actors. But we had other animated shows in our top 50 that I think are better. And you'd think we committed some sort of war crime, given the number of tweets and comments. The BoJack Horseman hive is very strong and very loud. Let's just put it that way. In fact, even more than the Game of Thrones people, who were all like, oh, we must be because the last season sucked that they didn't put it on here. That's not why. I was always kind of mixed on Game of Thrones.
Really? Okay, because that was my... Just give me 28 seconds on that. I mean, so where did you put... Did it make your top 25, Game of Thrones?
No. It didn't make our top 50, actually. And it was
Now that is you showing off, sir.
It's not. It go back to my top tens every year. It's not on the list. The first couple of years were. Then it got repetitive and lost its thread and couldn't figure out what it wanted to do and was arguably pretty misogynistic in the way it used its female characters. But that's another longer conversation. My point is I've been consistent. You can go back to my top tens for years in Game of Thrones. In the first couple seasons, it was landmark and it was breakthrough. By season three, it wasn't on my top 10 anymore. So I was trying to be consistent with that. Mm-hmm. I understand why people like Game of Thrones. I guess I'll just leave it there. I don't want to get too much into a why Game of Thrones was bad argument. It was important to TV. It was important to people. It did a lot for HBO. I get why people like it. Every list is personal taste.
Amen.
So we keep going back to this idea that we're like trying to, I'm not trying to appease or anger or tweak anybody. This is literally my list. And another thing to stress, this is my list today. In 10 years, I may reappreciate Game of Thrones in a different way. Yeah. Every list is the list the day the person wrote it. Opinions can change. Rewatches can change. I might catch some show I missed entirely because, as you said, there's 500 of them. Yeah. So nothing's written in stone.
No, I get it. That's well put.
Can you think of a personal favorite that you knew you weren't going to get on there or something that was too off the wall that you couldn't get through?
Well, Allison and I work together. Both of our like top tens are in here.
I guess I mean okay.
What are you thinking of? Is there an example, Griffin? Something that's on your mind?
Oh, well, when we talked about this, I said how much I love Kroll Show, and I haven't been seeing that up much.
The fact of the matter is I can think of another 50 good shows that I liked quite a bit that aren't on here. You know what I mean? Like we listed 25 and then we listed 25 honorable mentions. I was cutting things from the honorable mentions and I was like, man, I watched every episode of that show.
And really I liked
it
too.
And it made my top 10. Yeah. So like, there's a lot of really good TV not on this list. I'll say that out right now.
Right,
there's a lot of shows that made my top 10 not on this list.
Well, I'll pause here. It's 10:46. We're talking to Brian Tallarico at RogerEbert.com. Okay, so that's TV. Let's plow through some of the films. I'm anxious to get to those, too. And this is fun because a lot of these you could sit down and watch this weekend or sometime soon. So what's on that list after The Mincing Rascals is our award-winning podcast. We dropped another episode of that Thursday about 5 o'clock. We always do Thursdays for you Mincing Rascals fans. If you're not a regular listener to that podcast, you should be. It was judged best in the state by the Illinois Broadcasters Association. The gang took a hard look at what Eddie Johnson did and said and what the mayor did about that. And the story that's sort of getting lost this week, which is the body slamming video of that 29-year-old guy that was drinking the vodka at a CTA stop. I mean, what happened there? The Mincing Rascals podcast broadcast will touch on that after 11 o'clock here on WGN Radio. Editor over at RogerEbert.com, Brian Tallarico, is on a phone. He visits with us on occasion about TV and film. They've got their best of the decades lists out. We just went through the movies or TV shows. Let me just plow real quick through your list on the movies. You have at number 11, sure. Brian, The Social Network, 10, The Master, 9, Get Out, 8, Roma, number 7, Under the Skin, number 6, The Wolf of Wall Street, 5, Phantom Thread, 4, Mad Max Fury Road. So glad you put that in there. Number 3, and I'm not being sarcastic at all. I do not remember having more fun coming out of a movie theater than that. Inside Llewellyn Davis is 3. Moonlight is number 2. And number 1 is Tree of Life. I started at number 11 on your list because I was curious to see The Social Network on your list and on another list or two, maybe. I didn't know that we were all going to look back so fondly. It was a great movie, but I didn't know that that was going to be one of the 10 or 11 best films of the decade. Wow.
It's a wildly prescient film, too, in terms of what would happen over the next 10 years, in terms of the negative discourse around social media and privacy and IPs and all kinds of things. If you watch it, I would recommend everyone watch it again. It looks entirely different now than it did in 2010. Plays even better now than it did in 2010. And I mean, it was clearly the best film of that year. No one watches King's Speech anymore. No offense to King's Speech fans. Social Network still should have won Best Picture, in my opinion, that year.
8 is Roma. And that was I don't want to say controversial film, but I think some people rolled their eyes when that came out because they'd heard the buzz. And then they went to see it, and they were frustrated by that movie. But I thoroughly enjoyed Roma.
Why do you think people were frustrated? The appropriation aspect of it?
That, the opening. As I recall, is that subtitled in a black and white as well?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
That's strike 4 for some people. But remember,
it's our only subtitled film on the list. We got a lot of flack for that, for having a very American list other than Roma. It's funny, you can never make everybody happy, you know what I mean? Like, in a certain sense, we should have a larger foreign spread when we're talking about the best films. Of course we should, but we're also in America. This is the entire staff of RogerEbert.com getting together and making a list, and we're an American site who go by American release dates, you know what I mean? I'm sure, as I said before, there's probably a great film made on the other side of the world that most of us haven't seen that could make this list if we could. It's, again, hard to see everything and quantify everything.
Tight on that is turning anyway. Everyone watches stuff with subtitles now, even if it's in English.
What's the one Korean movie that everybody's crazy
Parasite.
About? Parasite.
Parasite.
Griff, is that on your list, Griff, the best movies you've seen?
This year, for sure, yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually on our top 25 of the decade. I think it was number 17.
How does that happen? I've seen that word. I don't know anything about Parasite. What's that movie?
Well, then keep it that way. Know as little as conceivably possible.
Really?
Because it's the kind of movie that works best the less you know. To be very vague, it's about class issues and culture and Korea, and that's just all I'm going to give you. Believe it or not, I watched it again last night with my wife because we're in award screener season where we're watching things for awards and end of year, and it holds up even better the second time. So
Moonlight is number two, and number one, Tree of Life. Was that easy for you to make Tree of Life the best movie of the decade?
And it's not just because I'm editor, but that actually is my number one. I mean, we kind of all got together and got all our lists together, and that was my number one, and it was Matt Zollersites' number one, who's our editor at large. And something else we considered that listeners may be interested in, it was a movie that Roger loved. It was one of the last movies that he gave 4 stars and truly appreciated and admired. So we kind of took that into account when we were considering what would be the number one film for RogerEbert.com.
How about that?
For me, it's my number one quite easily. I don't think there's been as good a film since it. I find it a very moving, transcendent experience, and I try to watch it as often as I can.
How about that?
By
the way, Griffin's list, he and his pals are putting together their list of the decade. Is that right, Griff? Mm-hmm. This is of the 2010s?
Yeah, I haven't seen
as many as...
When you make your personal list, too, you don't have the responsibilities that Brian does when he's putting this together. So it's easier and it's a little more fun, I imagine.
I don't think you need an asterisk by this, Griff. You have The Social Network at 20, Moneyball at 12, Grand Budapest Hotel at 10. His five are Oslo, August 31, 4, Inside Llewellyn Davis, Force Majeure is his 3, Certain Women is 2, and Griff's favorite, I would have guessed this, I know you well enough, Griff, number one is Phantom Thread. Did Phantom Thread make the RogerEbert.com top 25?
That was 5, I think, right?
Number 5. Okay. It was actually the third P.T. Anderson film in the top 25, which we got some flack for, giving him so much real estate. Griff, do you know that Force Majeure has been remade and that it's premiering at Sundance in 8 weeks?
I just saw the footage from behind the scenes. I don't.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
I'll be there. So I can call in and let you guys know.
I'd love to hear
they're remaking Force Majeure with Julie Louis-Dreyfus and Will Ferrell. I don't know. It could be interesting.
I don't trust us Americans with this material, but... But we'll
see. No, that's probably valid.
All right. On that note, well done, Brian. You're always a fun conversation, and you're, of course, brilliant in print, too. Go to RogerEbert.com, and if you're scrolling around for something to look at or remember fondly, they've got 2 good lists out, one of the best films and one of the best TV shows of the 2010s. Happy holidays. Yeah, nice to talk to you.
Do a quick search, and you can see where to watch all of our films from the best of the decade, which is kind of important for people, like where they go on Netflix, Hulu, all that stuff. And let me say real quick, our best of 2019 comes out Wednesday, so watch for that.
RogerEbert.com on Wednesday. Thank you, Brian. Tellerico, 1056 WGN News coming up. Favorite Christmas song? In my top 10, anyway.
Since it's Christmas, let's be glad, even if your life's been bad. To be
trust me, hang in there. It's fabulous.
Take a walk out in the snow, and hear Santa's ho, ho, ho. He's got a million miles to go.
Everybody, sing along now. Here we go.
La, 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 la.
This is Sufjan Stevens and his Christmas album. Doesn't all sound like this, but some of it does. And this is Christmas to me. It goes on. sound a little bit more like that with people playing washboards and banjos and instruments and things like that. You can kill that riff.
That wasn't the one I thought it was going to be, actually. A lot of his Christmas albums are very hushed and reverent.
Yeah.
Not that one, though.
No. Sufjan Stevens' Christmas album. And it really is lovely. And if you didn't like that song, you'll love the rest of the album because it's, like Griff said, it's not lush, but it's reverent and it's soft and it's very thoughtful. Very thoughtful, Sufjan Stevens. But that song, to me, is just like, it just feels like Christmas when you were a kid, to me anyway. But it does take a little bit of getting used to. Mincing Rascals normally come your way at this time. We'll pause here and get you the Mincing Rascals podcast broadcast in just a couple of minutes. You know, everybody has their lists out at the end of the year. So it's the best movies, best TV shows, best Christmas songs, best books. And one book that is appearing on a lot of people's lists this year for best book, it's certainly on the bestseller list, is The Body, A Guide for Occupants by Bill Bryson. Bill Bryson's the guy that wrote A Walk in the Woods and A Short History of Nearly Everything. And he's just a very thoughtful guy who explains things to you in a very entertaining way. Now he's taking a tour of the human body. And so he describes how we work. And it's, I was kind of dreading this because I thought, oh, I'm going to read this book and it's going to be about all the bad things I'm doing and I should take better care of my body. It's not like that. It's more just, isn't it remarkable how much we take for granted, how intricate a machine you and I are? But at one point, he does make this point. He says, for the longest time, the crucial importance to health of just moving around was hardly appreciated. It wasn't until the 1940s, he says, that science began to understand that physical exercise will actually make you healthier. Think about that. He said, going for regular walks reduces the risk of heart attack or stroke by 31%. Wow. An analysis of 655,000 people in 2012 found that being active for 11 minutes a day after the age of 40 yields 1.8 years of added life expectancy. I'll do that again. If you're active for 11 minutes a day over the age of 40, you add almost 2 years to your life. If you're active for an hour or more a day, you could live an extra 4.2 years. Exercise boosts your immune system, nurtures hormones, lessens the risk of getting diabetes and a number of cancers, including breast cancer and colorectal cancer. It improves your mood. It even staves off senility. The more or less universal belief that we should all walk 10,000 steps a day, which is about 5 miles, is not a bad idea, but it has no special basis in science. The 10,000-step idea is often attributed to a single study done in Japan in the 1960s, though it appears that that's a myth. So go ahead and exercise, but don't beat yourself up if you didn't get in 10,000 steps. In fact, if you do 11 minutes, you'll add 2 years to your life, 11 minutes a day. There's nothing special, he says, about 10,000 steps. Only about 20% of us manage even a moderate level of regular activity. He said today the average American walks only about a third of a mile today. Forget about five. And that's walking of all types, including walking around the house or the workplace. Even in an indolent society, it would seem almost impossible to do less than we do. According to The Economist, some American companies have begun offering rewards to employees who log 1 million steps a year. An activity tracker such as Fitbit, people will have, and the employer says, if you do 1 million steps a year, we'll give you a bonus. That seems pretty ambitious, but it's only about a mile a day. Some people put their Fitbits on their dogs to rack up the miles because they don't even want to do that. Thank you, Bill Bryson from The Body. Mincing Rascals, podcast broadcast coming up. It's 11:19. This is John Williams, or a reasonable facsimile of him. Got a little bit of a head cold. Hope it's not bothering you. I don't seem to sound like myself today, but I'm fine. You can hear me weekdays now from 9 a.m. until 12 noon, Monday through Friday on WGN. We also record a podcast with my friend Steve Bertrand, your favorite radio newsman, middays on WGN. And in this podcast with Mr. Bertrand and also Heather Sharon from The Daily Line, Lisa Donovan and Eric Zorn from The Tribune, and our own Justin Kaufman, who you hear in the evenings on WGN Radio on Extension 720. So we record this podcast on Thursdays and drop it Thursday evening. I hope you listen to the Mincing Rascals. Here the gang is talking about Eddie Johnson and Lori Lightfoot's firing of Eddie Johnson. Remember, Lori Lightfoot at first praised him, had a press conference, and said what a great job he had done, and she'll wait to pass any judgment on whatever happened that one night that he was out drinking and passed out at the wheel of his car. But remember, Lori Lightfoot had a celebratory press conference for him, and then she got angry, and then she fired him.
I think we need to have a better understanding, and she's announcing that she is letting the superintendent go for cause to explain why, beyond just, you know.
I want to know when she saw the body cam footage, when she saw the other footage, when the inspector general briefed her. And I want to hear from her what was the tipping point.
Right.
We don't know the answer to any of those questions.
And I'm sorry, if she's going to answer any, when she said, out of respect to his wife and kids, I'm not going to talk about this.
Oh,
that was
wait, that wasn't a signal. That was nonsense.
Either you come out and say, I'm firing
you. Literally waving a red flag.
Hey, everybody, don't look over here.
I am. Either you come out and say, I'm not going to say anything about this. He's done. Goodbye. You know, he lied to me, period. That's it. And walk off the podium.
Yeah.
But you don't, I mean, you don't sort of halfway, you don't throw him under two wheels of the bus, you know. And I think that the situation, when you're Eddie Johnson, you're in that kind of situation, you know, you put, every time you do something like this, you put your wife and your kids at risk. But overall, she seemed to act with dispatch, and I think you got to praise her for setting the right tone.
I want to quote Eric Zorn's column. Among the clinkers in the fired Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson's public statement Tuesday, the most tone-deaf line was, quote, reputations are not built in a day and not damaged in a day either. This pithy, self-serving summation fundamentally misrepresents the fragility of reputation, a key concept for all whose good name is important to them. And then at the end of the piece, it's really well done, Eric. You said downfalls are often followed by redemption, especially when the allegation, when the alleged transgressions are as ordinary as infidelity, drunken driving, and dishonesty to cover it up. I had to chuckle when I read that because you make it sound like no biggie, but I know that's not what you meant.
Who among us?
But then you said there are often second acts in American life as raw emotions fade and the disgraced find their way back into our good graces the same painstaking way they got there in the first place. And I thought Tiger Woods did this. Bill Clinton has done this. Maybe Bill O'Reilly is in the process of doing this. Bill Cosby, not so much. We've seen people who have fallen and we judged, and then Americans are pretty forgiving if you
express contrition,
if you're honest,
if you're transparent and contrite, and the thing about reputations is it takes a long time to build them up, and you can piddle them away in an hour, not just a day. And that's what Johnson got totally wrong.
You think his reputation will survive this? 10 years from now, they're going to say, what about Eddie Johnson? They're going to say 30 years cop.
Steve Rhodes in the Beachwood Reporter pointed out that Eddie Johnson falls in line with, if you look at the heads of the CPD and CPS under Rahm Emanuel, they've all been scandalized. Everyone except for Jean-Claude Brizard, who was just, he just said was incompetent. but the point being, you have Barbara Bird Bennett, who's in jail. Forrest Claypool had to step down because of an ethical accounting error. Gary McCarthy was fired for Laquan McDonald, which in my mind, if he saw that tape and tried to cover up, is way bigger than Eddie Johnson falling asleep at the wheel.
Yeah.
My point is, there are a lot of scandals that have come out to the heads of departments.
And the top cop, the last six have been bounced?
Yes.
They were shown the door, so fired.
Everyone apply for this position.
Yeah.
That's funny, because I thought our governors were the position that was most, you know.
Well, what does that say when you look and you see that Eddie Johnson was a hand-picked by Rahm Emanuel? I mean, the police board, which included Lori Lightfoot at the time, had suggestions for people who were outside of Chicago.
They gave him three nominees.
Yeah, and he said, nope, we're going with Eddie Johnson. He's like, I don't want this. He's very clear.
We don't want anybody outside.
But the point being, I mean, what does it say about Rahm Emanuel's tenure that everyone that headed up either the schools or the police left in scandal? That's crazy.
Good point.
Speaking of the cops, the story that I think should be getting more attention this week, I mean, this is great. John Kess called it a soap opera. I forget the headline, but it was something along those lines. But the thing that maybe to me is more nuts and bolts about the police in Chicago is that body slamming of 29-year-old Bernard Kirsch Let me see if I got my facts right on this. He was allegedly drinking vodka in the public way, I think is how they described it. Was that near a CTA stop or something?
Bus stop. Yeah.
And during an altercation with officers, he evidently licked one and spat on this person. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes.
And he's now charged for that. That's assault. But the officers have also been suspended, two of them, in relation to this case. The video, which is not the official police body cam video, but from a passerby who happened to be witnessing this, shows the officer picking him up, bear hug from behind, reaching him up, and like Roman Greco wrestling, just bam, slamming him down to the ground. It's on the pavement, and in fact, the man's head hits the slightly elevated curb. I don't know how the guy survived it.
I'll take one side, you guys take the other. The only thing I had on that, when I saw that video, was when the newscaster said that, you know, he had allegedly spit in his face. I find, obviously, the response to be very violent, but what do you expect? If you're going to spit in a police officer's face during a don't-do-this moment, it's hard for me to have any sympathy for the guy if he's choosing to spit in a police officer's face. That's just me. I get that it was overly violent and he's getting obviously being suspended, but come on.
The man we know now is seriously mentally ill.
Yeah.
So that he may not have had the capacity to comply, and that, you know, there has been so much emphasis of reforming how Chicago police deal with mentally ill people when they interact with the police, and sort of a focus on calling trained counselors and de-escalation techniques.
You're right.
And
I thought this officer had used some de-escalation
tactics. Said that they said he did.
The FOP, the Fraternal Order of Police, the police union president, said that he had tried some de-escalation tactics to wait. The public needs to wait and see the body cam video before making a decision. But I guess I thought at the heart of this, that kind of action was merited when somebody. I'm not disagreeing with you, Justin, about that's. It's disgusting to have somebody spit in your face. But I'm not disagreeing with that. It's awful. Your reaction probably would be.
It's one of the most inhumane things to do.
It
to
is,
another human being.
But on the other hand, they're trained to take this tact when they're facing some kind of threat.
He could have killed the guy.
You should
not spit on somebody. I don't know where to grade that. I've missed the mark on this kind of topic before. But that officer knew what he was doing. It looked to me like he was acting out of anger. He was acting out of rage.
And that's the point I would make to Justin, which is, you'd be furious. I'd be furious. We'd all be furious. It was a very human reaction to lash back at the guy, to punch him. Because it's not just gross, it's dangerous. That guy could have HIV, spit right into his mouth.
Would you rather have happen to you? Me spit on you or me pick you up and body slam you on the curb?
What Eric is going to say is they're trained to not do that, right? Like they're trained to be able to say that if someone spits in your face, you have to be trained to know not to do that.
You have to be.
I would not be able to do that. I would not be able to do either.
So I totally understand his reaction. It's pretty clear to me by the force with which he threw that guy down that he was mad. And he wasn't just, he was administering some street justice, but we have a long and bad experience with police officers administering street justice.
I don't want to necessarily be all in one side.
Yeah, no.
It's like moving to the other side. That's one of the problems in here, is because there have been too many times where we've had human responses to crime or to whatever, and we've seen police officers go above and beyond what is the natural.
That is a huge part of their training, is learning how to de-escalate these situations, how to handle people who are out of control like that. And if he had just grabbed the guy and like pushed him to the ground, we wouldn't be talking about this. No one would have even cared about that.
Well, that's the point you were bringing up, right?
He picked him up and threw him down from the guy's head was 6 feet above the ground, and he didn't just like drop him. He threw him, and the guy's head bounced off the curb. Yeah. It's amazing that he lived, I think.
And I appreciate that we want to give the officer the benefit of the doubt. It's an incredibly difficult job. One that I could never do in a million years. But the fact that we cannot trust that they are telling us the truth about what led up to that incident is why it is so damaging to have the mayor straight up call the former police superintendent a liar who lied to her and to the public. If that is the tone that he set, how can we trust any official word? And I gotta say that this should be burned into the hearts of every Chicago journalist, because dozens of us wrote stories about in the immediate aftermath of Laquan McDonald's death, and all of those reports were complete not truths, for lack of a better term.
And in part because all the officers who were on the scene seemed to get together and they all seemed to write reports.
That's the theme
and witness
of what we're not even doing.
Sure. Some guy spit on him. We're not even sure.
So what's sure? What's different?
When I heard that he spit on him and that there was a lot of fluid in the spit. And I thought, wow, are you guys layering this story?
I believe, actually, you know what makes me believe that is if you watch that video through, after he throws him on the ground, the cop who threw him to the ground kind of walks away and he's like wiping his face on his sleeve.
Reason he did it was like, damn. This story is still in the news today. You have not heard the end of it, but that is part of the Mincing Rascals podcast, which we like to broadcast part of on Saturdays. You can hear it in its entirety at WGNradio.com, on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John, or wherever you hear podcasts, it's The Mincing Rascals. It's also 11:30. Let's pause here. Our Vibe Score segment's right around the corner. Griffin always starts us out with a song, something that you and I maybe should know or appreciate. And then I've got a couple of other things for you to rate on our weekly score of 1 to 100.
My boy's got his own ringtone. It's the only one I know. It's the only one I answer. Seven missed calls, lighting up my cell phone. Sending you a text saying, call you when I get home. Taking off my work clothes, working in a cold one. 45 group texts, 50 group DMs. Send another text asking me if I seen them. Pushing back a deadline, gotta make my bedtime. Then I crack a smile cause I love you and I do it all again. My boy's got his own ringtone. It's the only one I know, it's the only one I know.
11:35 on WGN. Griffin, Alvin and the Chipmunks have cut a new album. What is this? What are we listening to here?
It's the only one I know, it's the only one I know.
It's 100 Gex. They were at Lincoln Hall two nights ago. They sold it out. I was trying to win tickets.
To that?
Absolutely. That's from their album last year called 1,000 Gex.
As in geckos?
It's G-E-C-S.
Okay.
And it's an album that's making waves right now, and people love it, and I'm one of them.
Does all of their music sound like that?
It's often pitch-shifted vocal, but in many different directions. In distorted vocals, it's very experimental pop is what I would call it, basically.
This is our Vibe Score segment. We catch up on some stories in the news we didn't otherwise touch on, like that.
And sort of, I'm not done talking about 100 Gex. This is going to be...
Scoring it on a scale of 1 to 100.
The next half hour. Just talking about... That'll be longer than their album is. It's like 10 songs. They're all like 2 minutes a piece. But it's like... I think they take what you think of as like trashy pop and turn the screws on it and do something especially weird with it. And it's sort of, like I said, experimental with things that you would think were just garbage.
Yeah.
Maybe you think it's still garbage.
No, but that's okay. This may surprise you, but I try and have an open mind in this segment. So are they covering people or are these original songs?
Original songs. Yeah. Original songs.
All right, 1 to 100. That thing that we were listening to a minute ago?
That was called Ringtone by 100 Gex.
Joe Brand, 1 to 100, what do you give it? Go.
I give it a 70. I was not a big fan. Sorry, Griff.
No, it's okay.
You know what? It kind of brought me back to like 15 years ago.
Exactly.
When they used to have those, were they television commercials for dial or call this number for this ringtone? And then it would play it.
Yes.
And it reminds me of that like Cuppy Cake song. I don't know. I was just not a fan of it.
Totally. Or like Laffy Taffy. Do you remember that song?
Yes. And the Crazy Frog.
Absolutely.
Yep.
This is exactly what I'm saying. This kind of thing that you think back on and like you might reminisce it just because you were young, but you're also like, God, that was terrible. And they take that stuff, that ennui or whatever, and just put it in a blender and do crazy things to it. And the first time I heard it, I was not into it either. I would just say spend a little time with this album, and it might stick in your brain.
Might grow on you, huh?
Yeah.
Well, that's it. I want to like afford people all the space to be creative and grow and do stuff. So I don't want to blow out your candle there. But scale 1 to 100, I'm giving that an 18. James Sears in the newsroom, 1 to 100. What do you give that gecko thing?
You know, I really have to be in the mood for that kind of music. I'm going to give it a 50 because it just depends on my mood.
Where are you, Griff, 1 to 100 on that?
I'm like a 92. I'm just really into it right now. I don't know what to tell you.
One more time, the name of that album and artist.
It's called 1,000 Gex, G-E-C-S. The band is called 100 Gex.
You know, I lit up our phones this week. I wanted to just get the opinion in the room. I've noticed a lot as I go out eating, drinking, and shopping this year in the Chicago area. Dogs in businesses, restaurants, and bars. People are bringing their pets in, and sometimes they're large. And these aren't service animals. These are just people who want to spend more quality time with their dog at the restaurant. Tore up the phones this week. Some people really like it and don't like you judging them. Better my dog than your bratty kid. But a lot of you aren't crazy about this trend. Joe, pets in public places go.
I'm a pet person, so I'm okay with it, even though I don't have any pets. Yeah, I mean, if the dog is well-trained or whatever animal, I guess. But I don't know. I have had an experience once where I was watching a dog. We went to Navy Pier. We went to outside of Harry Carey's, I believe. And the dog would just not stop barking. And I got so much anxiety. I was like, we got to get out of here. We got to go. I don't want to be that guy. So, I mean, if it's not a well-trained animal, I feel like you're not really doing too much of a service to everyone else who wanted to go enjoy a meal somewhere.
To say nothing of the things some of the dogs are doing in the aisles at Home Depot, by the way. And I got a lot of texts and calls about that. Some dogs just, you know, aren't potty trained well enough to know not to go inside stores, and that happens.
Well, it's basically outside. How is a dog supposed to know Home Depot is an outside? Like, it's airy. It's kind of cool in there.
They have landscaping materials. How does a dog know?
It's got the smell of... Hardware store smell is like an outdoorsy kind of thing.
Well, that's it. So, like, when I see them at the following kinds of stores, a Home Depot, a Menards, an Ace Hardware, a bicycle shop, I think, okay, this is kind of the vibe fits.
It's like if the dog has an accident, we have the tools here to deal with it.
If it's a polished cement floor, I think it's different than if it's a restaurant or a department store. So I have my rules. I hate to be on the bubble about this. I'm like 60-40. 60, it's bad. 40, it's okay. It doesn't wig me out, but it blisters some people, dogs, more and more in restaurants, bars, and stores.
Yeah.
It's against the law, by the way, just if you're keeping score at home. It's against the law to have your pet in a restaurant. Unless it's a service animal and you have a license for that dog, you're not allowed to bring it where there's food.
Not on the patio, even, because a lot of people like to do the patio in the summer.
It's okay. He's a good dog.
I've spent a lot of time in my life working in stores. I spend some time currently working in a store, and you're not supposed to bring the dog in, and a lot of people do. And in theory, I'm against it because there's food about. But every time I see one, I'm like, eh, hey. It brightens my day a little bit, I'll be honest. I mean, it just depends on the dog. A
lot of people do that. They see the dog and they go, oh. And then they pet it, and it's kind of this communal experience we're having with your Great Dane here in the restaurant. So some people can do that and some people can't.
Great Dane. Is anyone bringing their Great Dane?
That's it. I mean, a guy called in yesterday, and he had 150-pound Great Malamute or whatever you call those things.
Alaska Malamute.
Yeah, and people love the dog, he said. But I don't know if everybody felt that way. That was the vibe he was getting. James, where are you on this? Dogs in public places, please.
I have a Malamute mix. Just got her 3 months ago. And we go for walks around the block, and people are like, oh, so cute. But I would never bring her anywhere that wasn't made just for dogs, like a dog park.
Right.
Well, that's you 3 months in. Come back in a couple years. You might feel differently.
When you're, how big is your dog?
She's an older dog, so she's like medium size.
How many pounds would you get?
Oh, I don't know. She's like 2 feet tall, standing on her four legs.
All right. So it's not one of these 150
pounds. Not
a
huge one, no.
Is this a rescue for you then, huh?
Kind of. She came from my my in-laws, who they're getting older, so.
Wow, yeah. Good for you guys.
Thank you.
I would say when we did a news click on this, and it was... I think the score was 74 against dogs in public places, 26-4 dogs in public places. By the way, Joel Brand, you got something for us?
Yeah, I'm going to go back to the music route. This kind of happened later or earlier in the week where everybody started posting their Spotify trends on Instagram. I don't know if I'm a get-off-my-lawn type of guy for this, but I do not care, and I can't believe so many people bought into it right away. I mean, it's, I've listened to these top five artists. Everyone will totally love this information and have so many uses for it. I just think it was, hey, credit to Spotify for doing it as, you know, advertisement or whatever, but that thing took off way more aggressively than I feel it should have.
Now, Joe, you know, I posted one. I know you saw it. I'm taking this very personally. And but you're not wrong. It is also like free advertising. I don't like to be an advertiser for Spotify and do it for free. And so I was aware of that, but I think it's a little fun. I kind of like, well, and as you can tell from this segment, I like to share music, I guess. I didn't do all of them, though. And you can also see people picking the thing that Spotify told them about their music listening that they're most proud of, because it also tells you a lot of stuff like, wow, that's very embarrassing that I listened to that song that much. So I'm not going to share that one on Instagram, but I'll share the other thing.
But, and I get it. Social media is just totally a ploy for self-promotion, but maybe not a ploy, but that's what it is. I mean, it's essentially what it is.
It's what we're all doing here.
It is what it is. It's social media.
It's just, it's one of those things that I feel like, oh, this is me. Everyone is going to be so interested in it as I am.
Hey, Joe, what was your top song?
I don't know. Oh, you know what? The fiance and I share Spotify, so it was all Billie Eilish anyway.
See, this is why you don't like it, because you don't get to do it.
you feel like you're being misrepresented, that you're a little too 17-year-old teen pop star.
It was like, as soon as it was available, there was the wave of people posting their stuff. And then maybe like 30 minutes later, then there's the wave of people sounding like Joe. And I think both are valid. I think they're both fine. I think it is annoying, but it's also fun to do. So
I'm
shocked
to hear you guys say this. All people are doing is are sharing their most listened to songs on Spotify, right?
Yeah.
But think about all of the stuff we tolerate on social media, all the judging, all the self-promotion. This is just, hey, these are the songs I liked. What's intrusive about that?
I really want to know, though, for all the people that went through all their stories and saw all their friends' top five favorite artists, who could go back just on recollection and say, oh, Jim listens to Taylor Swift and Carol listens to this. I highly doubt anyone retained that information.
I want to be clear. I'm not defending this too strongly. I do think you're in a way right. But I also don't. That's not the metric that you should judge this exercise by. I don't have to remember. It's still fun to see. I don't remember. I remember you like Billie Eilish. I know that.
I know that is so on you.
It was a suede.
That's
survey.
Not embarrassing, by the way. It's not embarrassing.
I don't mean to be embarrassed by saying Billie Eilish. Again, it was definitely influenced by my fiance's listening. But yes,
this is so upside down because it seems to me like as the older man in these conversations, I'm the one saying you people are sharing too much and all of that, and you guys would be more in the flow of that. Here, I think this is harmless and kind of fun, and you guys are getting all 60-year-old on this sort of thing.
Again, I'm pro.
You kids, what are you doing? I get off my lawn. I don't want to know what your stupid music is. What am I supposed to
do? It's not that I don't want
to
know. I just saw everyone, I don't know. I pictured people saying, oh, that's so crazy. I can't believe I listened to this artist more than this one. Everyone's going to enjoy this.
Oh, and there's an element of bragging involved is what I was trying to get.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's what comes through. I think that's what's annoying.
What's an example of that?
I don't know.
The bragging. I mean, there's nothing to be proud of the fact that you listen to a lot of Billie Eilish or somebody else.
Yeah, anything.
You are what you are.
I don't know.
Maybe you don't like the reflection in the mirror, Joe Brand, of the Billie Eilish that you're seeing reflected.
Again,
back
I
on
am
you.
Totally okay with being a fan of Billie Eilish.
Did you guys see Billie Eilish on with Jimmy Kimmel this week?
I did not.
Okay, so this is very interesting. Griff, don't shake your head like that.
This is the old man. This is the real old man stuff.
Okay, you want to hear a little boomer coming at you? Listen to the exchange 17-year-old Billie Eilish has. She's sitting on the sofa next to Jimmy Kimmel after this. So here's little Billie Eilish, and she is a 17-year-old pop sensation. And Jimmy Kimmel, who is not a real old guy, but Jimmy Kimmel, who's a lot older than her, cannot get over the fact that she's such a star at 17. So he's doing that old thing where when you ask a young person if they remember stuff that's happened, and then you marvel that they don't know about it because they're so young. Remember, Billie Eilish, when she was born, 9/11 had already happened, right? So she is not swimming in the same stream as Jimmy Kimmel. So their conversation went a little like this.
You are 17 years old, which is crazy that you're this successful at 17 years old. And of course, I think back to myself at 17, not as successful. But I was 17 in perhaps the greatest year in American history, 1984.
Who was born after that in this room?
You know who Madonna is.
I do know who Madonna is.
You know, can you name a Van Halen?
Who?
I'm going to start crying. Have you heard of Cyndi Lauper?
Yes.
Huey Lewis?
No.
Fill in the blank. Run DM?
What? What is that?
It sounds like a direct message while you're jogging now, but it, Run DMC. It yeah, Run DMC. Great hip-hop group. Have you ever seen The Cosby Show?
No.
Wow. Have you ever you ever played with a Cabbage Patch Kid?
A Cabbage Patch Kid?
Yeah. In 1984, you'd have to go...
Like a Sour Patch Kid? That's what I'm thinking.
Same era, really, but in 1984, at Christmas time, your parents
would... Is it a candy?
It was a doll.
Okay.
Would go to the mall and fight other parents for these.
Wow.
And then they bring them home to you, and you, that was how they proved they loved you.
Okay, so let me just ask you guys. That's Jimmy Kimmel along with Billie Eilish. Huey Lewis in the news. You guys know who Huey Lewis was, right, Joe Brand?
Yes.
James Sears in the newsroom. You know who Huey Lewis is, right?
You'll have to refresh my memory.
Wow. Griffin, are you? Would you recognize a Huey Lewis song on the radio?
Yes, yeah.
We all knew Run DMC, right? You know the one that took my breath away? She did not know of The Cosby Show or had never seen it. I don't know if she even knew there was a Cosby Show.
That's a bad question. I think she does know what it is and probably hasn't seen much of it, but it's a weird thing to talk about now.
Okay, Bill Cosby's a funny reference point. You could have taken another show from that era. But Cosby was gigantic. He was...
I know, but I think... I don't know for sure, but I think in answering that question, she was sort of self-sent and didn't know
Didn't want to say something stupid. Yeah, right. Or wrong. Cabbage Patch Kids. Do you guys know Cabbage Patch Kids?
They were not a part of my life, but I
know
what they are.
Yeah. Joe, Cabbage Patch Kids?
Same thing as Griff.
James Sears, same...
Yeah, my sisters had them.
He's absolutely right. This is one of the first times where I think Christmas toys made people really crazy in my adult life, where I'm trying to get toys for my kids, so I'm paying a little closer attention. I had sons. I didn't have any daughters. I was never buying a Cabbage Patch doll. I think that was more a girl's toy, maybe, but maybe not. But that was never on our list. But people were insane. They were fighting in stores. They were... I don't know if eBay existed yet, but they would auction them or find a way to sell them for thousands and thousands of dollars. Cabbage Patch dolls. She had no reference point for that. And what we do to people who are like Billie Eilish, 17 sometimes, is we'll then roll our eyes that you're not paying attention enough. But I don't think there's any harm in not knowing about Cabbage Patch dolls. I think she needed to know The Cosby Show. Maybe she did. Run DMC, you don't need to know. Huey Lewis, you don't need to know.
What?
But
we have different views on this.
I have this insight. Where I get off, where I get mad is where people go, the Vietnam War, know what, I didn't hear about that, right? Or or where I then get on my high horse is, wait, you don't know the movie The Graduate? You need to know the movie The Graduate. You need to know the lines, even though that was way preceded you.
Yeah, but getting mad is so stupid. I hate this whole thing. You should not be mad. You should just say, oh, this is something I love. You might enjoy it, too. Take it as an opportunity.
That's way too civil and level-headed for our society.
And besides, it's not just I want you to like it because I liked it. I want you to like it because it's part of our cultural zeitgeist. It's who we are. You need to know this.
I don't believe in that, though.
You
There's
don't.
Nothing you have to like.
You don't like... I think The Cosby Show, you should know The Cosby Show.
I think she did. I think the thing with this, with her, it was the music that got people because she's a musician.
Yeah.
So if she doesn't know... And the one that I saw blow up, I didn't even watch the segment.
Van Halen.
Was Van Halen. It's like, why would she know who that is? It's fine. It's fine if she doesn't know.
To put it a little bit into perspective, when the White Sox were on their 05 World Series run and they were using Don't Stop Believin' by Journey as their theme song, they asked Jerry Reinsdorf about it, and he said, what? No, I'm not too musically inclined. I just found out a few weeks ago that Pink Floyd wasn't a guy.
It's 11:56. Billie Eilish on with Jimmy Kimmel. I'm John Williams.